We take a single episode of a science fiction TV series and overanalyze it to within an inch of its life. This is the Fusion Patrol Podcast. Welcome to the discussion. Hello and welcome to another episode of Fusion Patrol. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Ben.
And tonight we're going to be looking at the 1970s Fantastic Journey episode, Turnabout, another classic.
Classic.
It's a classic.
Oh.
Summary to follow. Having walked all the way through the portal from the last time zone, the weary travelers start to make camp for the night. Leanna decides that to let Mr. Whiskers stretch his legs after all that walking, and they leave the group. Soon, she is captured by a cage ray gun wielded by lecherous-looking men. Mr. Whiskers returns to the other travelers and alerts them that something has happened to Leanna. They follow her trail to an advanced city dominated by men who keep women as slaves and treat them as second-class citizens as well. Slaves and second-class citizens they may be, but they also maintain the amazing computer complex that keeps the city running. Our travelers are disturbed by the attitude of the men to their women, but unbeknownst to them, the women are about to turn the tables on the men and stage a revolution. The computer is tampered with, and the men are simply winked out of existence. The computer has determined that the travelers do not hold the same attitudes towards women as the indigenous men, so the queen of the women decides to keep them as breeding stock, because, you know, attitudes about women are passed on genetically rather than by education. Pointless plot complication number one. Varian pretends that Leanna's a rotten, man-hating shirker, and after quite a lot of prodding, Leanna catches on and plays the part so she can stay with the women. This has no further bearing on this story. Pointless plot complication number two. The men, being held prisoner, are being fed a poison. Not just any poison. This is one of those poisons that doesn't hurt you unless you stop taking it regularly. Now they have to stay, even though the women didn't bother to tell them, thus rendering the deterrent ineffective. Pointless plot complication number three. It appears that the men haven't been vaporized after all, but are in some bizarre timeless limbo. Pointless plot complication number four. The computer has the power to return the men to the women as night visitors, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and alter their personalities so that they're a lot nicer and loving to the women. This just pisses the queen off because she obviously loves the big jerk her husband owner was and is upset that this is just a night visitor. Pointless plot complication number five, the computer sends robots to kill the woman who maintains it. It is mad. It has been tampered with. The computer also refuses to set up any more night visitor booty calls for the ladies. Luckily, Jonathan Willoway knows about computers, and the queen begs him to repair the computer. When he learns that they have no spare parts to replace the ones that are broken, he explains he cannot repair the computer. Willoway is then sent to jail to reconsider this. He's also made to watch Varian and Scott suffer poison withdrawal. Meanwhile, Fred has avoided capture and is trying to get his medical bag to make an antidote to the poison. He's chased and then makes friends with one of the women, who helps him rescue his friends. Willoway pronounces the computer insane and that it must be shut down. When the queen finally agrees, Willoway refuses on a matter of principle. But then he relents. Pointless plot complication number six. The woman who maintains the computers tells Willoway that there's a failsafe to turn the computer off. Within 15 seconds, he must disconnect three components in three different consoles in the correct order. This process and these components have not been documented. Willoway will have to guess. Further, should I make this pointless plot complication seven, or just keep it with six? The entire complex will explode if he fails to complete the task within 15 seconds. Pointless plot complication 7, or perhaps this one's 8, depends on how you look at it. The computer is armed with lasers. Meanwhile, it sends its robot army to kill everyone else. Willoway succeeds! Yay! But then he turns it back on long enough to return the men, who have clearly learned their lesson. Don't let the women use the computer, which is no longer a problem, as the computer's been destroyed. What will tomorrow bring for this society? Anyway, that's it. I couldn't even call this a plot. That's why I just put it into a series of ridiculous plot complications, because this was my Naked Montague.
It was mine as well.
I was
this
just...
This was my... This was my Naked Montague, without question.
This episode irritated me from the word go. Kept throwing. It's like they had a little, I don't know, a bag with index cards that they'd written script ideas on, and they'd reach in and they'd take a hit of whatever it was that they were doing, and then they'd pull a card out and go, "Oh yeah, Robot Army."
Yeah, the part that actually got me really upset. I mean, at one point, I literally just paused because I was becoming so incredibly angry. Oddly enough, was actually how poorly written the women of this community.
Oh well,
were written
get Joan Collins playing the lead, and say what you will for Joan Collins, she's not an actress.
Oh no. No, she was okay in Star Trek. Sitting Ninja Forever, she was kind of okay on that. Yeah. But this is long past that. But all of the women here, well, especially Joan Collins, I mean, clearly because she's the queen.
Did she have a name?
Yes. I had it actually written down, and now I can't find it. I'm so blessed. Oh, yes, Haliana.
Haliana. Great name.
Yeah. What really bothered me is that usually with every revolution, if the oppressed manages to win, it's because they wish to usher in, I don't want to say a golden age, but they want to bring in a new idea, a new start, and do away with everything that they had been subjected to. And instead, all we got was a turnabout.
Amazingly, that was the name of the episode.
Yeah.
Turnabout.
I mean, but that is what we got. I mean, it was just a role reversal at this point. Now the women are the oppressors, and the only excuse we finally get is at the end. And this is what really burned me to no end.
I know what it is.
It's where she says, "I've never known how to lead or give orders. I've only known how to take them."
Yeah,
and
that
was really irritating. Rubbish. I'm sorry, I cannot accept that. I mean, it is human nature to want to try to turn over a new leaf, especially if you have been an oppressed class. I mean, we've seen that repeatedly throughout history. So what really bugs me is that this episode was co-written by DC Fontana.
I was going to bring that up. The DC Fontana connection is kind of interesting. I think I've mentioned, at least on the podcast before, that I've been going through the These Are the Voyages books. And you know, you learn some things about who was doing the work and who wasn't doing the work and who was throwing things up. And DC Fontana is definitely one of the people who was picking up the pieces and kind of behind the scenes doing a lot of important stuff. I mean, that's why she worked her way up into script editor, was because she'd done some really good stuff on Star Trek. Some of the stuff I don't think is even credited to her.
No, it's given a different name because she didn't want her name released because of gender issues at the time.
DC Fontana is her gender fake name.
That is true. But I think she also, but that she used a different, totally different name in the beginning. Can't remember what it is.
Well, anyway, there is times when somebody else wrote the script and then she came along and made significant changes that make the script what you would recognize it to be, that Star Trek script. And it's, you know, it's her. I have a lot more respect for her, but, you know, she's doing a lot of stuff here on Logan's Run and Fantastic Journey. And it's really dire.
I'm beginning to think that there is another person with the name DC Fontana.
Because
this is not the same quality of work. Now,
well, it is written with somebody else. So the question is her name on there because she tried to fix Ken Kolb's incredibly awful script and couldn't do it? Or is this truly a collaborative effort? And I don't know the answer to that question. I probably should have before starting this podcast, but that's too much like research, and it would be too painful. But you know, there's DC Fontana is of the Roddenberry school of, you know, social issues, and so here's your feminism episode. This is like the most poorly done feminism episode of any series I've ever seen, ever. But that's what it is. I mean, this, you know, we were making a claim that Fantastic Journey last time we were talking about it isn't really science fiction. Well, here they're trying that whole social science-y, fiction-y thing, and they're not doing it very well.
Oh, how about they're doing it outright badly?
Outright badly? Okay. I can accept outright badly. And it's not just the story. I mean, yes, it is very annoying when Queen Hollyoaks says, I just don't know how to be a leader because I've always been a slave. Okay, there's a certain amount of truth to that, but that's, you know, I don't know how to do accounting because I've always been a slave or, you know, something like that, but...
Well, I mean, like, for example, she's constantly being ordered around. Before the revolution takes place, she and the other women, totally being ordered around, totally being told, do this, take care of that, get this thing, whatever it is. She was always being pushed around in terms of what she needed to do. Now she has an opportunity to ask for help. And
from people who the computer says do not hold the same attitude.
They do not hold They do not hold the same attitude as the men of the community. And yet she just turns around. I mean, I suppose they're trying to...
Well, but she's keeping them for breeding stock. Which,
that's true. Well, but be that as it may, it's
even
like
Scott.
She can't even conceive the idea that, you know, I kind of got bullied a bit when I was the oppressor or the oppressed, I should say. Maybe I should think differently about these people here. Or are they trying to kind of go with that whole psychobabble of the, you know, the abused syndrome?
I don't know. But, you know, when she says she doesn't know how to lead, she knew how to lead well enough to organize a revolution.
Yeah.
So...
Even though she really didn't do much of the work. I mean, she had someone else go in there and do it for her.
Well, the person who knew what to do.
Yeah. All she simply said was, you do it. And somehow, maybe because she was married to Grunt Man.
Did you get the impression from the way it was written that, you know, she was giving instructions to the other women and she was saying, be ready and et cetera?
Yeah, she did. That's true.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the men disappeared.
Yeah.
So it's like, be ready for what? They obviously didn't know the men were going to disappear. I don't know what they thought was going to happen to the men, but they clearly didn't think they were going to be disappeared because why do you need to be ready? I mean, they're just gone. Okay. Well, nothing to be prepared for other than, I don't know. They won't ever have to worry about the toilet seat being up anymore. I really didn't understand that. It came as a complete surprise when they disappeared. And
well, and then,
of
and
course,
you,
and then that was...
Well, and then you bring up a really good point. It's like, okay, this is something that came as a complete surprise to everybody who was there. And yet they have this already, let's take it for granted, technology in each person's room, that tech that allows you to have a night visitor.
Yes, the night visitors. The computer-generated booty call.
Yeah, which obviously somehow tapped into, even though it did kind of repro... Well, what was he? I mean...
I don't know. Was he the guy from the Phantom Zone brought forward and his personality altered? Or was he a projection? And if he was a projection, then okay, fine. If he... was the guy, then how have they done night visitors in the past? Or
Precisely.
Did the men not have night visitors? And I'm going to say, I don't believe that.
No, I don't believe that either.
Not if they had that technology.
No, exactly. I mean, they must be using it. And the other thing that really gets me is, okay, the only way that the attitude could be altered is if he's not real. However, at the very end, when all the men are freed, he... does have some memory of
the event.
Of the event, exactly. It's a little fuzzy, but he does remember something about it. And you know, and then Hollyoaks, she confesses, you know, well, I had you summoned, or I don't know if she refers to him as a duplicate. I don't know, but the whole thing makes absolutely no sense. I mean, it becomes just the worst MacGuffin in
and
that entire
the men
scene
at the end. Because they didn't seem like they were particularly incensed at having been put in the Phantom Zone. They seemed like they were,
humbled, confused.
I was like, oh, we're back. Great. I think that probably wouldn't be my first reaction if I'd just been banished to the Phantom Zone for a long period of time. By the way, of course, as soon as, you know, we're presented with the typical
fantastic journey. It looks like everything's going to work out because we understand that thing. But I seriously, as soon as our travelers are gone, the men are going to go, what? The computer you used to overthrow us is no more? Huh. Well, get to the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, because that isn't the sort of thing that just one trip to the Phantom Zone overcomes. Attitudes towards women or towards men or towards any group of people that are not yours, those attitudes change with time and with education and with tolerance and understanding. They do not get put there by fear of going back to the Phantom Zone.
No, I wouldn't think so. I mean, not for that short a time. I mean, it's a type of incarceration, but given the amount of time that passes in this episode, I can't believe that that was significant enough for all of the men to suddenly have a change of heart.
Yeah.
It just doesn't hold up. However, how many times have we seen this kind of abrupt change in attitudes in previous episodes? So really, this one is just kind of still following the formula.
That's true. I think they were in there long enough to have experienced the thing we never see on elevators. You know, when somebody gets trapped in an elevator in a TV show, obviously the thing that always happens is there's a pregnant woman who has a baby there. I mean, that's what happens on trapped elevators. But I know that what really happens on a trapped elevator when somebody's stuck on the elevator for 10, 12 hours is they don't have a baby. They have a, let's call it a poo.
Ah!
Think about that.
Yeah.
What do? Do you designate one corner? You know, you've got five people in an elevator and you're in there for 10 hours and you're like, it's like, all right, let's pick a corner. And then your journey is even worse. So, you know, if those guys were there long enough, the place could have smelled pretty bad. So,
unless they were in some form of, I mean, as you said, if it is indeed an equivalent to a Phantom Zone, then they have no corporeal body.
Yeah, I suppose we could. We'll suspend their bodily functions for the duration of the visit.
Just for the sake of the episode and so that we don't have to go down any unpleasant roads.
Yeah, no, we don't have to do that. Yeah. And the bit where they ask Willoway to shut the computer down at the end, and they say, well, what are we going to do? It's like, well, you know, you people aren't very nice. I don't think I want to do that for you. Like, man. He relented awfully quickly, though.
Yeah.
And I felt like they just needed to fill in some lines of dialogue or something. Anyway, so let's take a couple points that just occurred to me in this episode because of literally the whole episode went wrong for me when they walked through the portal and Leanna says, oh, Mr. Whiskers needs to stretch his legs.
It went wrong for me during the opening credits. Let's be real.
Well, those are the same as every episode. So
I know, but
I
did make an observation during the opening credits that I want to bring up at some point.
Well, this is only the second one that's had credits. So,
I know, but still, I saw something and I thought, I'd be pissed off if that were me.
Okay. Anyway, so they come through and she says, well, he needs to stretch his legs. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. At the end of every episode, they go about five steps away from where they're saying goodbye to the people. And they pass through a portal. Next week, they pop through a portal, and they're all like, oh, we better make camp for the night here. I'm tired. It's like they've walked like 10 steps from the last episode.
Well, assuming, based on past episodes, assuming that each new zone is an episode that we're seeing, I don't want to use the phrase real time, but pardon?
Well, I was going to say, I mean, in one of the episodes, the one with John Saxon, he did recount the zones they had passed through.
Exactly. So if we're going to use that as a pattern, then yes, exactly. It's been, you know, the last episode was, oh, hell, I don't even want to remember. There was an act of love. Oh, God. Funhouse.
Oh, Funhouse.
Last episode. So did they just come from the Funhouse?
Which was an awfully short zone, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And prior to that was an act of
an
love.
An act of love.
So
they've walked about 100 yards.
Yeah.
They've walked about 100 yards maybe 200 across the zone, and then they've come along here. And the other thing is, if the cat needs to stretch his legs, let the damn cat walk. He's got four legs. He can walk just as fast as they can.
And the cat's not going to run away because it's attached to Liana.
Yeah, it's an intelligent hyperspace alien cat. I mean, it's yeah. Anyway, so that's unless when you're in the portal, you walk for 7 days before you come out the other side.
Ooh,
which, then that would be real time, and then we could.
That wouldn't explain the pilot episode.
No, it would not. That would be like a so. Therefore, yeah, no, yeah, it does not. I don't think that's the way it works. Okay, so now my next question is, if the computer can take the men and make them disappear, and then later reappear, for that matter, why did it need that robot army to try to kill people?
Invaders?
Well, I mean, but it, when it went after the women, it went after the women. It didn't go, yeah, zap.
Well, from what I could gather, and this, again, this is not a proper rationalization because it is stupid, but if we're going to suspend disbelief, like, incredibly high, my understanding is that the machine sent all of the Watchers after the women because they were women, and women were trying to hurt it.
Well, that's why it sent the robots, yes. I absolutely agree. That's why it sent the robots against the women, is because the women hurt it, and so it wanted to kill the women. But again, it just seems like it already has this amazingly awesome weapon at its disposal. It could hurt them real bad by putting them in the zone.
Well,
forever.
I kind of get the feeling that is not something that is not a normal function. That is something that the one gal somehow managed to do, because she had to go in and, well, I don't know what exactly she did. Did she
move some of those boards with the incredibly big resistors and capacitors on them? Yeah.
So trying to find some kind of competent story element to make that work is a bit out of my reach at this point.
Yeah, we're not gonna work our plot around this.
No, I don't think we really can. I mean, I kind of got the feeling that the computer could not do that.
But it could bring the men back as night visitors and change their personalities.
Yes.
So why didn't they just have them do that at the end of the episode? Explicitly.
Well,
could you bring the men back and make them nice?
Well,
because I think Willoway might have done that.
Why not just bring the men back? I mean, if this was a regular function of the computer, why not just bring the men back when the computer thought that the women were threatening it? Because after all, the computer had been built by a man, even though the thing's got a woman's voice. You know, I don't know. There was just something kind of really off about that.
That did the fact that it was a woman's voice, did it subservient to the men?
Yeah,
I mean, that was what I had to take it to be. But, you know, there was no sisterhood there with the women.
No, absolutely
none.
And,
of course, I got the impression that none of the men knew how to work that thing.
Oh, no. None of them do.
Just that one woman who was the daughter of the man who built it.
It's like they have absolutely no idea how any of their tech works.
Yeah, it works by I tell women to do it, and then they do it, and sandwiches. I don't know. It was a painful episode. We learn where Willoway worked: NASA, JPL, and Caltech.
Yeah.
You know, it's a funny thing. I always make fun of that in talking about those opening credits. That crack about Jonathan Willoway, a rebel scientist from the 1960s, and I'm watching this show from 2015, and you know, if somebody said we're going to bring in a scientist from the 1960s, you would not put him in a position where you're going, hey, could you help me with my problem on my Mac? Because he'd go like, what's
a Mac?
What's that?
That's, you know, the other thing that really got me.
You feel this 1960s gap. You look back at it and it's like, this is just ridiculous that they would think he could do anything with an advanced computer. That's just stupid.
Exactly, he did with the androids when we first meet him.
Yes, but. And that makes no excuse for the androids or the rote computers or anything else. But it's difficult to look at this. This show is from the 70s. So this is viewing it from our point of view. If they said Jonathan Willoway, a renegade scientist from 2005, you'd go, all right. If he was a brilliant scientist in 2005, he might still be smarter than the average guy in 2015. So, but because we're looking at it over 40 years, it really just makes it all the more absurd.
Yeah, I had a hard time believing that he could actually make heads or tails out of that computer. And of course, the computer itself is a complete contradiction. I mean, there are aspects of it that look highly advanced, and then you take a look at its innards and it's simple circuit boards.
Oh, yeah.
That was just really poor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's where I will at least give Star Trek a lot of credit, in that when they looked at their computer components, they looked like, okay, that's something pretty advanced, something that I've never seen before.
For 1960s. Sometimes when Uhura went under her console, that was a pretty bog standard circuit boards underneath there. When they would shoot from behind the console, looking at her face, staring through the thing.
Yeah, but they only did that once.
And iMud Norman, his guts. Not obviously the redone version, but the.
Well, that's why they had the redone version, because the guts were stupid.
Yeah. So anyway, so not always. But yeah, I mean, a lot of the stuff like the tapes and things that they would pull from Star Trek, they did have a feel of, you know, it is a completely different technology that we wouldn't see. But yeah, those circuit boards were really, really antiquated. And I'm having trouble believing, you know, just pull one out and move it a slot over and plug it back in.
Yeah, that'll change everything around.
That really is difficult to swallow.
Well, then keep in mind, however, again, as you said, this is 1970s, and
who'd seen a computer except Steve Wozniak and
Steve Jobs, not even Bill Gates.
Well, this is late 70s, I think.
This is late 70s. There was no such thing as a home computer. I mean, the only people who ever saw a computer were people who worked in, you know, buildings that housed massive mainframe systems. I mean, that was about it. You didn't really have small personal computers like we do today. No one really understood what a computer was in terms of its innards, how it functioned, all of that, unless you were specifically trained in that. And that was a highly specialized job at the time.
Yeah.
So this was one of these things where they thought they could bluff the audience. And I would even go so far as to say that the writers and the show producers – the set designers, they were just as ignorant, you know, and I'm not using that as a pejorative. I mean, they just did not know. So they were projecting their own quote unquote ignorance onto the audience and saying, you know, well, the audience isn't going to know. We sure as heck don't know. So we can make this because we don't know any better and the audience isn't going to know any better. The problem is that it works great then.
Now, I know, but now it's so hard. Anyway, so what was your thing in the credits?
The one thing that kind of really this is the second time that I've seen the credits since rewatching this, and
narrated by Race Bannon.
Yeah, and this is what I got. I mean, how much must it have just absolutely sucked for Carl Franklin, who played Fred, to have his character be introduced as simply Fred, a young doctor just out of medical school, after having followed Varian, a man from the 23rd century possessing awesome
powers.
It's like, okay, talk about massive inferiority complex after that. It's like,
yeah.
I mean, okay, granted, we're introduced to, you know, Jared Martin's character, you know, man from the 23rd century, awesome powers, and he kind of stands there with that smile, and he's like, ooh, what a guy. And then all of a sudden, Fred, a medical student, and you're going,
he's not even a medical student. He's actually,
Out of medical school.
He is
a doctor just out of medical school.
Yeah.
I mean, I would feel very insecure after seeing that.
I would feel insecure based on the parts they give him in the episodes, but yeah. Not just
and that's the other thing. Now, Fred kind of sort of gets to save the day a little bit here.
So glad he's able to make that poison that doesn't poison you unless you don't eat the poison.
Yeah.
Antidote.
How convenient. I mean, the only time we don't see him eat is at the big banquet that Morgan and his cronies are throwing for our travelers.
Well, that's because he's pacing around going, we got to go get the women.
That's right.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, yeah, you can send your hate mail to Eugene. No,
that's what he's doing. And
but you're
okay,
right, it is that. It's you know, okay, so.
And come on, this is the other note I have, and I'll bring it up now, because when he goes out to get his medical bag, he is chased by the only black woman in the group. Because he's having dialogue with her, and she's referring to, do you love me or do you want to kill me? And, hey, baby, he calls her mama.
Baby. He calls her mama.
Calls her
baby.
I know. You know, he doesn't call her sugar. But, I mean, it's so
it's
degrading
really
for her,
tacky.
And it's degrading for him too, because it's such a stereotypical 1970s blaxploitation kind of thing. And it's like, did she have to be black because the censors wouldn't allow
anything interracial?
A black man to be talking to a white woman that well? I mean, the whole thing just heck out of me.
I dare say it was because interracial relationships were. I mean, keep in mind, this is not that far off from Requiem for Methuselah.
Mm.
We're only about, what, 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason they got away with that kiss, is, as we said before in past episodes, is because it was forced. But we're just 10 years away. And
Plato's Stepchildren.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you're right. It's Plato's Stepchildren. Requiem for Methuselah, what am I thinking?
It's like, that's the one with Hottie in it.
Yeah.
Raina.
You know, you're right. Plato's Stepchildren with the forced kiss between Kirk and Uhura. So here we are. We're just 10 years later, actually a little less, if my math is right. And society has not yet moved forward enough to accept any kind of willing interracial relationship, even if it's just a friendship. I mean, it's just not going to happen. Especially if the woman is going to try to suggest that there might be some kind of affection there. They have to go with a black woman. I mean, we look at it by today's standards and find it insulting. Rightly so. Because what this is, it's a reflection of the really ignorant social norms we had at that day. So in a really stupid sense, the episode is actually kind of serving some sort of a social purpose. But probably not in the way that they originally intended.
No. No, I don't think that his dialogue with her was intended in any way to portray anything in that. I mean, their dialogue was about relationships between men and women.
Right.
You know, just they don't have to be.
I know, but they can't have that conversation.
Right.
And she can't.
Between two non, yeah.
And she cannot ask the question, do you love me?
Right.
And even then, at the end, when they say goodbye, there's still some, you know, I will miss you. And he says, yeah, me too. You know, so obviously they are still suggesting that there's some kind of emotion there. I mean, I'm sure that he likes her and that at this point he regards her as a friend. And I dare say if they had stuck around long enough, we probably would have seen a wedding between the two of them. But they can't.
Just before they chucked him in the volcano.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. We're going to have a wedding. Oh, we know this great zone just two weeks back. Let's go there.
Let's go past the amusement park and, that's, yeah.
I'm sure they've overthrown their volcano god by now.
Yes.
But at least with Fred, he got to have some kind of action. He got to theoretically save the day by simply pouring liquid back and forth from one little test tube to another. And once the color changed just the way he wanted it, bingo!
I think this is it. I can
by
work on a more permanent one later.
I got it.
Which, of course, had no purpose also, because when he went, he gave the formula to Willoway and Varian and Scott. And then the queen came in with
the
antidote for them anyway. It's like,
and
oh, I was going to give you this anyway.
And that was the real antidote. So yeah, the whole thing was a complete waste of time, it turns out.
As were most of the plot complications in this episode, which is the weird part. All of them just were really just like, ooh, we're still running a little short.
Yeah, but how...
We started off and we were running 41 minutes short, and now we need to add a few things to this 45-minute story.
How many times have we seen these kinds of wasteful moments in past episodes. I mean, this is just another one. The only difference is that this one's got a lot of them.
That's what it is. This one has just done so many of them. And it just it was like, I think it was about the third or fourth one that hit me. And I'm like, that's just not, this is not going anywhere. It's like when they had Leanna side up with them.
To what end? And then we don't even see her.
She never did anything with it. We barely see her again.
We hardly ever see her until towards the latter part where they're going to confuse the Watcher.
Yeah, that worked real well.
Oh, that was fun. Yeah, I enjoyed that enormously. But then she finally shows up. But aside from that, she becomes completely invisible and is irrelevant to the story. And I just kept wondering, you know, it's even in my notes, I wonder where Leanna's gone to.
She was there in a couple of scenes, and they were stupidly treating her as if she was part of the group.
And
I know that was sort of what they were trying to do, but I mean, it just is defies credibility.
This would have been an excellent time, you know. For example, okay, maybe instead of Scott finding out that the men are being poisoned, Leanna can find it out.
Hey, she could have done something good.
And she could have done something about it. She could have gotten her hands, because she's a woman and she's to be trusted. She gets her hands on the antidote and she manages to sneak it in, you know. But oh no, we can't have that.
How about this? They say to Leanna, said to, you know, as a sister woman, you're welcome to stay here with us, and or you may go on your way. But the men are staying here; they're breeding stock because they don't have the same attitudes, and so that's going to be good. Okay, one, and you know, a little bit of protest here and there. Oddly enough, 14-year-old boy doesn't go, "Whoa, I've hit the jackpot," but. Varian then pulls this, yeah, Leanna, why don't you just stick around with these people, you shirker, making us do all the work? And Scott's like, Varian, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
What? That doesn't make any sense. And Leanna's standing there going, huh? And Varian, yeah, and you make this boy here do double the work. And Scott's like, what? I don't do double the work. And Leanna's like, huh? And everyone in the room is not looking at them going, this is the worst, stupidest pantomime.
It's the worst bluff
I've ever seen. The only one that does it right is Willoway, who instantly catches on and has that sort of smirky smile on his face that he was doing when he was fooling John Saxon's character a couple of zones ago, where he's like,
yeah, but Willoway's duplicitous.
He's sneaky, yeah.
What Varian is doing is second nature to Willoway.
Uh-huh. It's like, it was terrible. It was terrible. Oh. Okay, so last thing, Varian, new power.
Oh, he can mind meld.
He can now take the pain from another person onto himself, and he does that with Scott. And that's just this, and there's also another brief scene. He really, really is carrying off the fatherly thing.
Yes, he is.
With Scott. He is really taking him as his own son. And it again, give Gerard Martin a little bit of credit. Whenever he does that, he seems to do a very good job of
it. I agree.
The motion he can play.
It's the one
fatherly
thing about it that I really do like. And if there is any shining moment to this episode, it's that scene where Scott is just now hallucinating because of what the withdrawal from the poison is causing. And Varian is now going to try to comfort and then try to take away any of the pain that Scott is going through. It was a good scene. Unnecessary in the grand scheme of things, I think. But it was a good scene nonetheless, because I like the relationship. And it does sort of track. It makes sense. I don't have a problem with it because, as we've said in the past, Varian took an immediate liking, and not in an ugly sort of way, to Scott right from the very pilot, because he saw that Scott was a very inquisitive young man. And he was the first person that Varian was willing to trust and share his secrets with. So I don't have a problem that the relationship has progressed to this point. It does not bother me. So no. I think this is one of the few things, let me change that. How about the only thing that this story has that I thought was worthwhile? but it's so brief and so mired under everything else that by the time the episode was over, I had completely forgotten about it.
Yeah, it's anyway, this episode once again has renewed my calls for the cancellation of Fantastic Journey. Fantastic Journey needs to be canceled. And this show is no good.
You know, the thing that slays me is that I've never seen this one before. This was my first time watching this one. When I saw Fantastic Journey on its initial run, I only got as far as Funhouse.
So you've got two more?
Yeah, two more episodes I've never seen.
Oh, the joy you've got. I haven't seen any of them. So, I think I may have seen the pilot, but I have not seen any of them. So this is all virgin territory for me.
I got angry. I mean, with the past episodes, it was like disgust, but I still had some kind of memory, something. There was some level of familiarity, even if it was really distant. There was some kind of familiarity regarding what we were watching at the time. This was a fresh watch. I have never seen this before, and I was just aghast at
agog.
Yeah, at how everything in this story was just so god-awful bad.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not just bad, it was insulting bad. And I even have that in my notes, and you stole my thunder, you rat.
Insulting bad?
No, it's just that I had said that, and I'd mentioned this when we first reviewed Act of Love. I said that, you know, an Act of Love is right up there with The Imp. And I even said that during the show. I remember that. And I said, true enough, but this episode actually created feelings of utter disgust. We're approaching the naked Montague territory with dreadful piece of garbage.
Yeah, I will admit, it raised my ire when I was watching it. I mean, I didn't get that out of the naked Montague. So, you know, that I feel The Imp is worse than the naked Montague, but that's could just be because my utter disgust from people going, oh boy, let's go play a game. That may just be that does that to me. This one, I don't know that this is worse than, say, an Act of Love, which is terrible.
Ooh.
But at the same time,
man, I don't know. I think I have to say
something about this one rubs me wrong.
I have to say this one is worse. I mean,
you know,
there is nothing.
It's like the difference between, say, Poison Ivy and say, Diarrhea. You know, they're both very uncomfortable, but one probably is more irritating than the other, maybe? I don't know. I'm not going to say which one's which, but well, this is either Poison Ivy or Diarrhea.
I'm just simply going to go by initial gut reaction. Act of Love, I thought, was stupid. I mean, and it had me just shaking my head with the
SMH.
Yeah, there was a lot of hashtag SMH in Act of Love. I could not believe, you know, I don't necessarily want to rehash that entire episode, but I couldn't believe that this advanced technology, this advanced people could resort to such idol worship.
Right.
But now we've got this episode, and all I could think of is, I'm really disgusted. I mean, disgusted to the point of just really angry. It takes a lot to put me in that frame of mind.
I want to meet DC Fontana someday and ask her about some of these episodes that she's done for Logan's Run and Fantastic Journey.
I met her one time, but boy, was she not in a good mood that day.
Maybe somebody had already asked her about
Well, to be honest, it was in between seasons 1 and 2. Of Next Gen, and there was a writer strike going on, and there was a lot of bad blood that was beginning to kind of boil behind the scenes. So she was not in the friendliest of moods. And at the time, she was out there trying to push the new War of the Worlds TV series.
Mm.
So she did not really come across. I mean, I had read one of her books, which I actually thought was quite good. It was a Star Trek novel, and I actually thought it was quite nice. And I went up and I complimented her on it, and she gave me just one of the most painful thank yous. It's like just trying to say thank you was I'm providing you a service by saying I appreciate that you liked my book. I mean, she was really in a bad state of mind that day. So for me to walk up to her then and say, let's talk Fantastic Journey, probably would have seen me chucked out of the convention hall.
I had a similar circumstance with Straczynski where I told him it was an episode I had been watching some of the early Babylon 5. Yeah, I like that one. And the response back was, yeah, that one wasn't very good. I'm not happy with that episode at all.
Oh, believe me, I've met Joe too, and yeah. He's another one that yeah. he's just a curmudgeon. That's all there is to it.
So let's sum this one up. It's one of the greatest episodes of television ever, or it's one of the worst things we've ever seen. Can't be anything in between because that's the way these things work. So which is it?
Well, I would have to say this is one of the greatest episodes of the worst television ever seen.
Fair enough. I'm going to go with that. This would not be the first. If you wanted to get a good feel for what Fantastic Journey is about, this would not be the episode that you walk with. Yeah,
no.
You should definitely save this one and then look fondly back on it after you watch the next two, which will probably be even worse.
You know, this really does follow the same trajectory as Man from Atlantis does, if you think about it, because the pilot for that, at least it had some – it was trying to be something kind of science fiction-y for Man from Atlantis. And I remember walking away from that not – I mean there were elements of that story that I thought were just inane. But on the whole, I did not feel like my intelligence had been insulted while watching it. Same thing with Fantastic Journey. I remember saying even that watching the pilot, I kind of liked it, but I was liking it for more nostalgic reasons than anything else. But as a whole,
you have no nostalgia for this episode, so
no. Looking back at the episodes we have seen, there's no question that we are seeing a total decline in any quality that might have been there the previous week. There's less in the next episode. That's the pattern. It's just going downhill. And at this rate, I mean, right now, this is the rock bottom. But, oh, God, I can't even bear to think where the next two episodes are going to take us.
But we will go there, dear listeners, as we watch these episodes so you don't have to.
Yes, we are providing you a service so that you can listen to us anguish and just moan and groan over how god-awful bad these things really are so that you can laugh at our misfortune while saying, I'm not going to watch that piece of crap.
And then you'll go watch it.
And then you'll watch it anyway because you really got to find out. Is it as bad as they really say?
It is that bad. It really is this bad.
So let's just say, listeners, we dare you.
We dare you. We double dog dare you to watch.
Oh, man, you went for the big
one.
Find
it on YouTube. It's there. Fantastic Journey.
How else do you think you're watching it?
Watch that and see if it doesn't make your ears bleed from the stupidity.
Oh, make your eyes bleed as well.
Eyes, ears, nose,
brain melt,
other cavities, whatever. You wear a diaper.
You're going to turn into a pile of porridge by the time that episode is over.
Well, Ben, it's been a bundle of laughs.
Oh, this was a hoot.
And thanks for joining me.
Oh, a pleasure, really.
And listeners, we hope you'll join us all again next time on Fusion Patrol.
Cheers.
Fusion Patrol is a Lone Locust production. Like us, leave us a review on iTunes. Or stop by and visit at our website, FusionPatrol.com. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Search for Fusion Patrol. Or just drop us a note at feedback@FusionPatrol.com. Our music is Fight the Future by Amber Wolf.
Cheers.